My service life was exemplary. I was Royal Air Force through and through, but just because of my sexuality, I was literally discharged there and then. I could have gone to prison for 20, I could have gone to prison for 6 months. That's only 24 years ago.
Welcome to Rabbiting On. I'm Rabbi Robin Ashworth-Steen, and it's almost the end of June, which is also the end of National LGBTQ Plus Pride Month. Although I have to say we are a little bit different up here in Manchester, as usual, and for us we make a lot of room for Pride at the end of August, and I can't wait to march on parade for the first time in 2 years. So this is something that Carl, you'll know loads about, our very first guest on the podcast.
Yay!
You've done such a huge amount for the LGBTQIA community in Manchester and nationally. You were the first openly gay Lord Mayor back in 2016, and you now serve as the LGBT plus advisor to the Mayor of Greater Manchester. So I'm delighted, thrilled to welcome Carl Austin Behan, OBE, to Rabbiting On. So hi, Carl. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you very much. I'm quite nervous, but I'm looking forward to this. So thank you very much.
Oh, you're in very safe hands. We'll be very nice, I promise. Okay. And obviously, alongside us, we've got Rabbi Debbie Young-Summers. Hi,
Good
Debbie.
Morning.
Hi. And Rabbi Miriam Berger.
Hello. And hi. Nice to have you with us, Carl.
So we, last month, it feels like last month, 2 weeks ago, I think it was, we were talking about Father's Day, we were talking about parenting. So you've got a toddler, I think she is now. So I was just wondering how you and Simon found Father's Day. How was it for you in what must have been a crazily intense year and a bit of parenting?
Yeah, it's been strange. So Willow is now 2 and 3 months. As a baby, for the first sort of few months, obviously, we were in normal world. We were in COVID lockdown. And, you know, it was great. It was just getting to know her. But thankfully, when we did go into COVID, she was still, for the first lockdown, she still didn't really understand what was going on. And we were doing FaceTime with her every day because the mums were self-isolating. And because of the restrictions that nobody really knew what the rules were, everyone stuck by this really hard rule until Dominic Cummings made that lovely gesture to go and get his eyes tested. And then it was literally a case of, so we were literally doing FaceTime video with her every day. And it was very strange because when we were finally let out on the 4th of July and had Willow come to the house, and we'd put up in the back garden, like big inflatables, the paddling pool. And, you know, she'd never seen any of this stuff before. And also, we'd not seen her for 3 months. Anyway, when she came out the car, it was like, daddy's. And it made you cry because you'd not seen someone for that long. And then Father's Day, we picked her up nice and early. And she treated us to a nice brunch with Daddy Carl's credit card. But it was lovely. And she just kept saying all day, happy Father's Day, happy Father's Day. And singing happy Father's Day as if it was happy birthday.
Oh, that's so cute.
But do you know, she is amazing. She is amazing. And considering she's only two and 3 months, you know, you can have proper full-on conversations with her. And it's like, how do children understand words? So about 8 months ago, I put her on my shoulder and I was like, wiggled around. And I was like, are you comfy? And then she wriggled around and went, I'm comfy now. I'm like, how does that? Yeah, it's just things like that are mind-blowing, and I love it, and, you know, I wouldn't change anything. You know, there's four of us, because we're doing dual parenting with a lesbian couple, and I have not got a clue how single parents can cope and manage, because there's times when these four of us, we're like, okay.
It's actually just making four-way parenting sounds ideal, the more the merrier.
It becomes quite complicated when you're having some discussions and some conversations about schooling and when you're doing this and, you know, there's certain aspects, but, you know, you're going to have them conversations. The way I sort of look at it in that sense is, I know we talk a lot about doing dual parenting, and we are two lesbians and two gay men, and we made that decision and we had a long conversation beforehand before we even had a child. And the difference with that is, I think about, you know, some people did criticise, especially in the heterosexual world, they did criticise that. But then I have to sort of question the fact that, okay, we chose to have Willow. We worked at it beforehand and had these conversations. We all knew what we were getting into right from the very start. So it just made life so much easier. And everything that we do is all about Willow, all four of us.
So Carl, I just want to take you back to what you were saying about how your daughter's been learning language. And I think it's fascinating that kids kind of just accept and acknowledge that as part of their growing up. They hear words, they explore how to use them, and they use them in different ways. I think as adults, we become a lot more nervous around language that we don't immediately understand, a terminology that perhaps is seen as kind of new to us. I'm really aware that we're going to be using this acronym throughout the podcast of LGBTQ. And I was just wondering if you could just spell it out for people and just enable them to understand why there's sometimes fewer letters, more letters, a plus, that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think some people do feel a little bit scared sometimes when using the acronym. So the one that most people use is LGBTQIA+, to make sure that you've got everyone covered. So L is for lesbian, G is for gay, B is for bisexual, T is for trans, Q is for queer or questioning, I is for intersex, and A is for asexual. And then the plus is for anybody else, whether that's pansexual or various other sexualities or genders that they want to conform to. That is what the plus is for. So I would normally come on here and I go, hi, Carlos and Bean. My pronouns are he, him and his. I'd use my pronouns. So pronouns are just the gendered norms of how we, how we are perceived. So I am a he, him, his. For people who are trans and non-binary, they would use gender fluid pronouns. So they would use they and them. And I think that's a massive issue for people who are working in call centres and for when people are on the telephone. And the easiest way that I can explain this is, so if you pick up the phone and you hear quite a deep voice and they're saying Sharon, and you're hearing a deep voice and you turn around and go, oh, hi, Darren, how are you? It's like, no, it's Sharon, her. It's like, No, all right, Darren, I can't, and you're misgendering someone and offending them at the same time. So I think for people who are using the phone a lot of the times, it would be better to use gender fluid pronouns like they, them.
Do you think we'll ever get to a kind of post-terminology world? And do you think that's where we kind of should get to? So I had an interesting experience a number of years ago. My four-year-old was at home with a babysitter, and I came home to a very excited, happy babysitter who had been very anxious because she'd been reading with my son Boys That Dare to Be Different, which is like a compilation of lots of biographies. And as a lesbian, she had been drawn to a biography of a gay rights activist in the book. And she'd been reading it with my son, and to which he'd said, "What is gay?" To which she'd panicked and started trying to explain to him, and then was worried that maybe I didn't want to explain to him and maybe he was too young. And at which point he interrupted her and went, oh, but I know when mummy does weddings, sometimes there's a groom and a groom and sometimes there's a bride and a bride, but I didn't know it had a special name. To which she was, you know, obviously like, oh gosh, you know, that it's so part of his world, part of his life. It didn't need to be different. It didn't need to be marked out with terminology. Do you see that as kind of where we should get to? Or actually, should we be taking pride in those terms?
I love that story. And I'm going to use that story because I think that's really heartwarming. So I do a lot of school assemblies, whether that's to year nine or whether that's to primary school. And for primary school children, they get it completely. The younger the child, they really understand the fact that, you know, that people do have two mummies and two daddies, and the fact that, you know, it is groom and a groom and you can't have a bride and a bride, because they see it for what it is and they just see two people together. It's only as you start getting older and you've got media, you've got social media, you've got peers around them, you've got you know, the adults and the grandparents around them. Oh, no, that's not right. Oh, no, that's not right. You know, this is wrong. Whereas they are so innocent and they see it. And this is why I really want a relationship education in primary schools. And then obviously sexual and relationships education in the secondary schools. But in primary schools, I think it is key to let people know that all families are different. You know, all families, they're made up in so many different ways. I look at mine myself at the minute, and I'm thinking, so there's times when I'm laid there thinking, okay, so I know that Willow goes to two separate houses. She's got two bedrooms, she's got two wardrobes. You know, we try and keep it as it is. And I'm just thinking, when I was growing up, and you know, we were three boys growing up in Crumstall in a two-bedroom house, and it was very much a case of everything was just sort of scripted. Everything was just like, we had the same meal every Monday, we had the same meal on a Tuesday, and it was very orchestrated. And I think that's the way it was back then. And I sometimes wonder, you know, with the fact of Willow not having that same base every day and the same sort of friends every day, is that going to have an impact? But then I think, well, it's just different. And I think, you know, it is, it's just different from what it was when we grew up. And to be completely honest, I wanted my life to be so much different from what I was living in. So I think that's a beautiful story. And I think it's brilliant now that books are starting to have those. You know, we've got, you know, especially in primary schools, there's so many different books now that you can get about penguins, and you can get about, I've got two mummies, I've got two daddies, we are what we are, different, you know, with disabilities, with our genders, our sexuality, with colour, with race. There's so many different things that we can sort of look at there. And I think it is so important that we do that.
We have great books in the Jewish community as well. We've got The Purim Superhero is a fantastic story where there just happen to be two dads. That, no, it's not actually, the story isn't about the two dads. It just is incidental to what the narrative is. And that kind of normality of what's going on is so important. I think I love Miriam's story because it is, we are, I hope, raising a generation for whom these things will just be normal. And for those of us who, I guess, the three of us present as, you know, heterosexual cis women, actually, we still have a role to play in raising a generation of young people who, for whom this is just normal, and they're just going to, please God, accept everyone for who they are and where they are. We're raising this wonderful generation of children who aren't baffled by same-sex weddings. Do we still need pride? What's the purpose of pride today?
Well, so for me, I think, yes, we do, especially when we see that there's still people out there that are sort of getting beaten up, and there's still sort of a lot of homophobic attacks. So for, you know, it is a time when LGBTQ plus communities come together, but also it's about when we acknowledge how far we've come to what, you know, we appreciate how far we've come, but we couldn't have done that without other people that have come before us, you know, but we've also got to realise there's still a long way to go. In the UK, we've got, you know, as gay men and as lesbians and bi people, we've got the same legal rights now. We've got same-sex marriage, and employers have a legal duty to make sure they tackle discrimination at work. There's still a long way to go for our trans community. I know how hard it was for me back in 1972 till 1997 to accept and to come out as being gay. So if that's hard enough for me, how hard it is for someone who's trans, who's trapped in a body, who's trapped in a mind, who's trapped looking at themselves every time they look in that mirror, to realise that this is not the body that I want to be. I am not in the mindset of who I want to be. And I think we need to value that, and we need to appreciate that, and we need to make sure that trans people and people who are non-binary, people who are gender non-form, you know, give them the respect. At the end of the day, what effect does it matter, and what effect does it have on my life if someone is trans or non-binary? It has no effect on my life at all. Could I show compassion? Can I show warmth? Can I show support for that person? Yes, I can. Is there any need for me to support, to show hate? Is there any need for me to show dismissal? Is there any reason for me to sort of think worse of that person just because of who they are? No, there isn't. So that's a real simple term for me. And I think we've got so much more to do for our trans community. And I think, you know, what was strange was I was discharged at the Air Force for being gay. However, someone who I know went through the Air Force and transitioned. And they were the first trans person, Caroline Page, they were the first trans person to go through the Air Force. And that was accepted. And they supported her through that journey. Yet being gay, so it's a bit of a different step when you look at it in that sense, because, you know, I ended up coming out, you know, I've got the British Humane Society Bronze Award for Bravery. I was mentioned in the Queen's Birthday Honours List in 1996. I'd just got my promotion through. I'd had, you know, 4 years of specially recommended for promotion. I had 4 years of nines in my appraisals. You know, my service life was exemplary. I was Royal Air Force through and through. But just because of my sexuality, I was literally discharged there and then, I could have gone to prison for 20, you know, I could have gone to prison for 6 months. And that's only 24 years ago. And I lost everything in the matter of a second just by accepting of who I was. And losing your family, losing your friends, losing your career, losing your job, losing your home, and not having anything to go out of them camp gates to could have been a massive, massive issue on my mental health.
I'm so outraged by what happened to you. Just, I've heard your story many times and it just continues to, I just get rageful, and it's recent. I mean, this is not, you know, generations back. This has happened in our generation. It happened to you. So I get really angry about it. But what I find really amazing is how you've used the opportunity of real hate and discrimination against you to now be an activist and to make sure that there is a space for anyone who is from the LGBTQIA community to feel at home and to know that there's a space for them. And it makes me think of, like, you know, the Jewish journey. We've been persecuted for many, many thousands of years. We've been strangers, we've been exiled. And for me, my Judaism, because of that experience, I know I will always be a strong ally to any other person who is being persecuted or hated for who they are, which is why I'm a really strong ally and hopefully quite vocal and out there and try really hard. So in Manchester, as you know, on the Pride Parade, for the first time 3 years ago, Manchester Reform Synagogue and the other another Reform Synagogue, Menorah, marched on Pride for the first time, the first Jewish, explicitly Jewish group marching on Pride, to be really out there and to say, we're not only tolerant, which is an awful word, we are celebratory. We're creating a place. So I guess I'm really interested, especially with all the civic work you do in Manchester. And I think, I don't know, I'm quite biased, but I think Manchester's pretty special. And I think our faith communities are quite special in Manchester as well. But obviously it's not only Manchester. But what importance is that? Because you spoke about the importance of, like, education, especially at primary school. What's the importance of having community leaders, religious leaders, being really strong, vocal allies on these issues for you?
As a community, as the Jewish community, I think, especially for gay men, I think we've gone through a lot of the same journey as time's gone on. I think for me personally, because I've been given opportunities to sort of mix with all faiths, and, you know, we've got yourselves at the Reform on Jackson's Row, you know, it is very much a case, it's an open door, anyone can come in there. Very much similar to Manchester Cathedral. It doesn't matter what race, what faith, what religion, what creed, what colour. You have buildings that you, as soon as you walk in, you're made to feel welcome. Even some of the synagogues that I've been in as well, it's like, you know, I go in there and I'm like, okay, so the kids are just running around and they're being given sweets at the front and it's just normal. I can go into the local Catholic church down the road and you're made to feel so uncomfortable because you've breathed in the wrong place. And I think
we have synagogues like that too. I'm sure there are loads of Catholic churches that are welcoming. But you're right, there is such a spectrum, isn't there, with different religious spaces.
There is, and I think what I've seen across a greater Manchester is a lot more acceptance of people being who they want to be, going to those churches or those synagogues or those places of worship.
We find ourselves kind of having been locked away, as it were, during the pandemic, isolated. So much of life was kind of put on pause. I'm liking this phrase, building back better, that actually we have this new beginning. We have this reset kind of opportunity where we don't need to emerge into the world as it was, but can be part of building something a little different and can re-begin in a slightly different way. What's your focus going to be in this kind of post-pandemic build back? Where do you think we should be channeling our strengths and putting our focus to?
I think we need to make sure, above all, people's mental health is looked after. Because even though a lot of people have been working from home and a lot of people have been furloughed, I think furlough was a great idea. However, I also think that it was a bit haphazard when it was first put out there. What I would have liked to have seen is the people who were put on furlough who couldn't work to have then been, to have still got the money that they were due, I would have liked them to have seen that, okay, you must do 20 hours a week voluntary service at a food bank or go and help do some litter picking in your community.
Kind of redeployed them.
Yeah,
elsewhere.
Definitely redeployed them. And you know, we could have built an army of volunteers and support workers and people to help people.
And I think that conversation about mental health is a really huge one that we're going to have to keep circling back to as we come out of the pandemic, and looking after our physical and mental health now is a really big deal. We're seeing lots of people who are dealing with illnesses that weren't tackled during the pandemic, and I think the mental health crisis is going to be a huge pandemic that we're dealing with. Does Pride help the LGBTQ plus community tackle mental health as well? Is it a place where people feel they can come and fully be themselves? Where is Pride in sort of supporting the community, I suppose?
I think the
LGBTQ community suffer from mental health issues because of the treatment that, as you've expressed, that you've received, like, that is bound to create mental health issues.
But I think Greater Manchester is quite unique in the fact that we do have a Pride event in all of the boroughs, whereas that doesn't happen in London, that doesn't happen in Birmingham, it doesn't happen in other areas. There may be smaller little Prides that they do have, but as towns within a city, we do that. And for me, the smaller Pride events are far more important than the larger ones, because that's where the people who live in those areas see the rainbow flags, see the fact that acceptance is there for them, see people that they know at these events, and it makes it more community spirited. And I think when they see that, and when they see that even with these Pride events we're talking about now, even schools are now having Pride events to have inclusivity at school and to make marginalised people at school know that it's okay to be who they are. So I think within the mental health of people last year, not having that open space, not being able to go to an event to see like-minded people. Like when I was in the Air Force and I knew that it was illegal to be gay, I thankfully knew that there was a Pride event in Manchester that I could go to, very under the radar, didn't need to sort of shout out the back. You know, I went on my own, my very first Pride event, I went on my own just because I wanted to feel accepted. And I remember just feeling confident in a way that I'd never felt before. And the fact that I now didn't feel a freak. I now didn't feel that I was worthless. That, you know, when I was kicked out of the Air Force, I was made to feel all this, you know, that I wasn't accepted. But being in an area with like-minded people who were all enjoying themselves, who were all having fun, who were being, you know, who were just there because of who they are, and being able to be them true selves, that I was like a pressure cooker that had built up and built up and built up. Then all of a sudden it was like, whew, bit of a kid in a sweet shop, you could say, but in the nicest possible way, because I was being accepted about my sexuality. I was being around others who identify as LGBTQ+. I was around lesbians, I was around trans people. I was around what society had said for years were freaks. This was a community for me. And I think that is exactly the same for Pride events that take place. Doesn't have to be a parade. Doesn't have to be a show. It doesn't have to be a main stage. It can be a stall in the back of a church fair. It can be a stall in the back of an event that's already taking place where it just says Pride with rainbows. And it talks about equality and diversity. And it shows difference. And it shows how we can embrace with our community.
I know lots of Jewish communities have Pride events and Pride services. And I know Robin's really looking forward to going along to the Pride March. What would you love to see faith communities bringing to the Pride March?
I would just love to see faith communities being at the march with members of your congregation. Doesn't matter whether they were part of the LGBTQ+ spectrum, but they were allies, and that they just treated everyone with the same respect. It doesn't, you know, it didn't matter who they were. It didn't matter if they were part of our community. marching there, proud, with a banner showing that you're from Jackson's Row, you're there from your Reformed synagogue, and you just a bit like when you probably have something like a Lord Mayor's parade, or you have something like a Manchester Day parade, or you know, where we all come together as communities.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I love about marching on Pride particularly is with all the placards and everything, but having verses of Torah, but the Bible, to really show that this is integrated into who we are as Jews. This isn't something that we're placing in Judaism, but there are plenty of queer stories in the Torah, which maybe we'll talk about one day. There is plenty for us to celebrate and uplift. I think one of the challenges that we have in our community that we're trying to address, because we're not there completely with inclusivity, I don't think, you know, any religious organization would say that they are necessarily, so we're working hard on it, is to try and make sure that we take from Pride that one day of the year, and we have like this fantastic service and everyone comes in their rainbows and then we go onto the streets, is to bring that into every day in the synagogue. So to mark things like the Trans Day of Remembrance in our services, to make sure that every space, someone who can walk in feels that they're at home, that it was created for them. And we've definitely seen an upsurge in people who want to convert and come into community in the last year. I think lots of synagogues and lots of religious places have. And I know that for members of the LGBTQIA community, very often there is estrangement from family and there is a pain around that and a healing. And what a synagogue can offer is part of their chosen family, of a safe space that is created with them in mind and that celebrates every single colour on the rainbow, but that it's done not in a tokenistic way, but together. And Pride for me is that call to action of remember what this feels like, remember what the importance of what this is. And we were sat, I got us a really bad spot on the parade, my fault. So we were like the last one, hundreds of, you know what it's like. So we were the last one anyway. So we're sitting and singing in this little park, all loads of Jewish songs and Hebrew songs, having a great time. And loads of people who were Jewish just saw us and came over and was like, I would never think this is possible. They just didn't understand that Judaism and being proud of your identity would be something that could be compatible. And I was like, this is what I want people to know about and feel when they come into our synagogue. So I think you've painted for us the importance of Pride so powerfully. So thank you. And thank you for sharing your journey as well and your story. It's just so inspirational. And you're busy in making sure that everyone has a safe space. So thank you for all your work, Carl, and for joining us as well today.
I'm sure that a lot of what we have talked about today has raised people's interest and perhaps allowed them to see a little bit of their Jewish identity and other parts of what makes them who they are, or loved ones and part of their identity, and has allowed people to start thinking about, well, how can I take this conversation further, and how can I understand the place of the LGBTQ plus community within a Jewish context. So you will see, along with this podcast, lots of other materials that we're going to be sharing so that you can find out more for yourself, but also so that you can contact us at the Movement for Reform Judaism or at each of our synagogues. We are on hand to help and support in any way that we can. A huge thank you to you, Carl, for opening up the conversation in such a fascinating way for us.
A pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Right. And I'm sure we're going to come back to loads of these different topics and thread them in our podcast episodes along the way. And thank you to everyone who's got in touch, listeners. We really love reading your feedback and your reflections on all this stuff. So thank you so much. And it's great to see how our Rabbiting On community is growing. We are open to everyone and we always love to hear from you. You can always email us at media@rjuk.org. or on Twitter @ReformMovement. So in 2 weeks' time, join us to discuss our upcoming festival of Tisha B'Av. We'll have a look at lamenting and how Tisha B'Av can enrich our lives today. So thank you all, and see you soon.